Hey, my friends, sorority cyclists and fellow solo riders, it's your long-lost, formerly sick companion, Graham Street here in Solo TV. Back with the SoloCast, episode 3. It's actually technically number 4, but I'm going to call it number 3 because the first one that I had was an interview with my wife, Kate, when I launched Solo TV back in, that was only in January. I can't believe it's only been 2 months. It feels like forever. I want to first start by saying thank you for all the well wishes from everyone. As many of you may or may not know, I got something about 2 weeks ago that started out just kind of as a cold or flu, and it progressed into something that basically knocked me off my feet, quite literally. My wife and I got it together, which if you've got kids, you know the deal. Having sick kids is, you know, bad enough, but being sick, you know, both parents sick at the same time, is a real challenge, and I got 3 young ones, so that added to, you know, the complexity of the issue, and more importantly, in relation to, you know, to work, I was unable to really do anything. So I do apologize for being kind of out of commission and not being able to do any Zwift group rides, which I know I was doing hot and heavy for, you know, through the month of January and into early February. I will be resuming those, I'm hoping, this coming week. Basically, I have been having to try to come back to the bike in short spurts. I did ride today in Zwift. I actually kind of rode solo, if you will, over on Watopia. I like to kind of hack the system. I know some of you know how to do that. That way I don't have to ride, you know, with thousands of people all kind of around me. When I'm not feeling very well, I kind of want to be isolated and alone. Maybe you can understand that or maybe feel the same way. I was able to do a couple harder efforts today. I did get to ride up the new, you know, volcano corkscrew climb there. It's pretty cool. You know, it's about a 7 to 10 minute climb, depending on how much you're trucking. You know, kind of similar to, you know, doing one of the hill climbs there in London or in Richmond. You know, it's got its, you know, it's definitely more of a VO2 max level effort. I did not go VO2 max level effort today, but I did, you know, was able to put in some good muscular endurance level efforts today, which is really usually how I start to come back from an illness, and recommend the same, of course, for you. Try not to put too much taxing on the cardiorespiratory system, especially if you're coming back from a cardiorespiratory, you know, affliction or you know, illness, whether it's a cold, whether it's the flu, whether it's bronchitis. I'll be honest, I really don't know what I had. I know that it started as a cold or flu. I think, in fact, I really know. It kind of matriculated into a chronic fatigue issue. Since I launched Solo TV in January, a lot of you don't realize how much work I had to put into it before I actually went to launch. I pretty much was working around the clock 24/7 to build the site, move everything over from the old club site, polish things up, make it better, a whole new set of programs and systems, and I think I really dug myself a hole. Physically, mentally, spiritually, you name it. And then when, you know, I started doing more of the Zwift group rides, you know, it's one thing to do, you know, your own hard ride or training, but when you're doing that with, you know, 50 or 100 or 200 people, which, you know, we've had some of my rides, you know, over 200 people, you know, I'm kind of in the spotlight. So if you've ever taught a class before, if you've ever, you know, instructed someone before, especially with physical activity, it's really easy to really overdo it and not know that you're overdoing it because you're spending more of your time focused on the people you're working with than you are on yourself. And as a result, you know, it really dug me a very deep physical hole. Probably, I wouldn't call it even overtrained. I would just call it tapped out. My adrenal glands, my immune system literally went down to zero. So let that be a bit of a reminder for everyone that, you know, we can't look at our cycling and our training in a vacuum, okay? So I know many of us, we get on a training plan and we buy a program, or we're using Zwift, we're using Cyclo 90, or we're here using workouts in Solo TV, and we think that everything is going to come about from our results based on how hard we work, how close we are to our building our FTP, you know, sticking to our heart rate functions while we're training. All those things are important. But if you really think about it in the grand scheme of things, if you don't correlate that with your work, your regular life, being a parent possibly, being a spouse, dealing with, you know, crap that you don't want to have to deal with, things that are causing other stressors on top of that 6, 8, maybe 10 hours of, you know, total physical stress in a week, it can really bog itself down and insidiously creep up inside you, and then it shows its ugly face. And because we're cyclists, because we are doing something physical, our manifestation of fatigue is different than the average person. We can really begin to realize just how messed up our system has become, because we'll get on that bike to go out for a group ride or a fun ride or a training ride or on Zwift or whatever it may be, and there's just nothing in your tank. And of course, the immediate response is, what's wrong with me? I'm not working hard enough. I'm not training hard enough. I'm a slacker. I'm losing fitness. And of course, that vicious cycle of that guilt response causes us to do what? To start to push even harder when our body is plainly telling us, back the heck off. And I didn't do that. I had a lot of the warning signs. I knew that I did. And then once my immune system caught on with an illness, it reminds me of the illness that I got, the mysterious illness that I had right before I left for BC Bike Race back in 2013. I don't know if a lot of you remember that, but I personally definitely do. Very similar, about 2 weeks before I left for BC Bike Race in 2013, I caught some mysterious bug or overtraining or a combination of the two that literally, I thought I was going to die. I mean, I could not function or move for about 8 days, I think. I must have lost like 10 or 15 pounds. I couldn't eat. Of course, you know, losing the weight was kind of great. And it turned out to be something that sparked, I don't mean the weight loss, but that illness knocked me off my feet. And when I came back slowly and worked myself back into it, I felt great. And I'm hoping to do the same now. I have to kind of keep tabs on myself, because really quickly, again, because of the nature of my job, I kind of feel like I'm in the spotlight sometimes. And I shouldn't feel like that, but I can't help but I do. I'm trying to be honest with you. You know, when you do what I do for a living, it's a great job. It's a great job description. I've been doing it for 15 years now. I love it. But sometimes it's a little stressful when you are the centerpiece of your own business, of your own work. So I am my work. And when you're not feeling well and you're not doing well, it's tough. And I kind of force myself to do things probably that I normally wouldn't with common sense and logic. But in any case, I am getting better. I am looking to get back on the horse. Now, what I have done this week, and I'm really happy that I finally got it done. It was supposed to come out 2 weeks ago. So my apologies for the delay. But the 5-week climbing surge, this is kind of a new set of simple, easy to use, progressive micro training plans that I'm inserting into Solo TV, along with the streaming videos, the downloadable plans and programs, the solo casts, the group rides, the live events. This is something that I've done before, and I don't like repeating things. I think if you know me long enough, you know I don't like repeating things, but I'll be honest, when it comes to training systems and plans, there's only so many ways to crack this nut. I'll be honest with you. I'd love to say that I've found shortcuts in the past, 31 plus years of riding a bike, and the past 15 plus years of coaching others around the world, that there are shortcuts to building, your endurance or your performance or your climbing ability, or your time trialing capacity, but there's just not. So although around us, the evolution of power meters, the introduction of things like Strava and Zwift, and, high-tech, heart rate monitors and carbon fiber materials and all these things that we can buy, none of those things, not one, will change the nature of you personally building yourself from a solo cyclist perspective. So whether you're riding an old clunky Schwinn with, 8 speeds, or you're riding a high-tech $10,000 carbon wonder bike, with all the electronics and stuff on it, at the end of the day, the formula to build that strength and endurance and capacity is the exact same. And personally, and I've mentioned this before, I can't say overall I'm pumped with the direction that cycling has moved in general. I'm not saying that we still are not able to go out and do solo rides, not able to tap into something more than just our physical performance. But yeah, I'd have to say in 30 plus years of riding a bike, that although some of the things that have come out are really cool and can definitely assist with all of us progressing on a pragmatic scale physically, I still think, to be honest and to be frank, is cycling's headed in an obscure direction. It really is. It's becoming very digital and robotic and imperialistic in nature, where it's dominated by this idea that numbers define the cyclist as opposed to the cyclist using the numbers as a tool to enjoy what they do more. And, you know, I'm going to bring this up just real quick, and it's you know how I like similes. During my illness and actually just before that, I really needed a break from all the cycling-centric materials that I've been doing, trying to build Solo TV, get everything moved over, again, how much of a toll that's taken on me. And usually one of the recommendations I have for others, and my wife always works hard to remind me, is to pick things outside what you're normally doing that kind of juice up your creative and childlike skills, which is one of the reasons why I love cycling so much and have been doing it since 9 years old as an actual cyclist, not just riding a bike, but literally being a cyclist since I was nine, is that by tapping into our creative juices, we're able to extract energy and possibility that wasn't there before. And so many of us, when we get into cycling, that creative juices are really flowing hot. And that's why so many of us are so blissful in that first, you know, maybe 6 months to a year to 3 years. And then it becomes kind of routine, right? You kind of find some of the same rides you always do, the same pattern, the same formula to build your FTP. You're on Zwift, you know, 3 days a week. You're doing the occasional race. You're doing the occasional century, whatever it may be. But it kind of loses that juiced up quality. And one of the reasons why I started Solo TV, one of the real ideas behind the idea of Solo, is that I'm really working hard to try to use modern technology to tap back into organic cycling. Back to why do you really ride a bike? Do you really ride a bike to hop into a digital world and massage your ego with an improved, you know, PR time or KOM, placing, you know, XYZ within a, you know, a mini race or whatever it may be? Is that really why you ride? I know it's exciting in the now, but I doubt if you really had to dig down and answer the question honestly, I doubt that's why you ride. It's one of the things you do to encourage yourself to perform better while you ride, but I doubt that's why you ride. I know for me, coming back from illness, always things become always very clear when you're coming back from something that sets you back. I've only been getting on Zwift since I've been trying to get better. It's obviously, this is where, you know, the indoor trainer, whether you're using Zwift or not, is irrelevant. It has a lot of benefit, whether you're using Trainer Road or just Cyclo 90 with me, or just, you know, getting on your bike and pedaling. The real advantage, of course, is if you're not feeling 100%, being on the trainer, you can get on quickly, get some work done, and get off and not have to worry about all the other variables that are within. But of course, you know, is getting on Zwift today and doing, you know, 60-minute workout with a couple hard efforts, is that riding solo? To me, no, not really. But it serves its purpose, which is getting some of the work done and some of the building blocks back up to strength, back up to speed. I mean, I'm looking out my window right now, and I'm in New England, I'm in Connecticut, and it's snowing outside. So, you know, riding outside today, tomorrow, the next day is going to be a non-possibility. So, again, this is where using technology is a major tool and an advantage, but it's still not taking away or substituting why I ride a bike. And what I want to talk to us about today, and I do have a topic today, by the way, is going over some ideas about riding differently. And I know I've talked about this before. In fact, I've done a couple podcasts on the Everyday Cyclist podcast over the past few years about really getting outside of your box. And one of the reasons why I reiterate some of these concepts, and I've got some new ones for you today, is because I believe for most of us, we have one of two choices to make. We can either allow cycling to take the same turn as everything else in our lives, which has become this kind of digital squared off box of numbers and competition, to be quite frank, is really what I see it as now, is this endless array of competition. Do you remember, let's just pause for a second. Do you remember, I know many of you have been writing for, let's just, at least you've been writing for 10 or 15 years. I want to talk to those people, at least 10 or 15 years ago. So if we take 10 years back, so God, that's only 2007. That's just scary. Let's go 15 years back. Yeah, hell yeah. Let's go 20 years back. Let's at least get into the 90s. I mean, we had none of this stuff. I mean, you were lucky if you had a speed and cadence sensor on your bike in the late 90s, right? You know, like the Cat Eye. Remember all those things? I mean, you'd have to come back and, you know, go into the internet, which was so infant in that in its timeline then. I remember, you know, some of the little websites back then where you were just clocking your miles. There was no KOMs, there was no segment times, there was no GPS, there was none of that. And I'll be honest, I think in some ways I enjoyed cycling better before all of this stuff came out. Now, granted, it's awesome to be able to analyze your data and your power and your heart rate and watch the progressions of your FTP and improving your time up at a local hill or in Zwift or whatever it may be. I admit those things are cool, but that doesn't mean I'm enjoying it more now than I was back then. I think a lot of us tend to forget the final answer of what it is you're looking for. I'm not saying we can't have both. And I think that, again, what Solo TV really represents an opportunity to do both. I'm going to keep continuing to try to lean you towards using the technology to go towards the second option, which is riding solo. And again, I've defined riding solo many, many times before, but to reiterate for any of you that are new listeners or new to Solo TV or new to anything that I've done with CycloCore or Everyday Cyclist Podcast, riding solo to me is basically the concept of letting go of the box, the digital box, the normal box that we're caged in most of our lives. Riding solo is the part where the end numbers do not define the blissfulness or challenge of the ride itself. The ride defines the ride, the quality of how you're connecting with yourself, your spirit, your soul, while on the bike, the ability for you to take challenges that far supersede numbers and pragmatics. Things that 10 years from now, probably the simplest way to describe it is things you can remember 10 or 20 years from now that still stand out in your brain and still touch your heart. Because 10 or 20 years from now, you are never, I guarantee you, never going to remember how fast you went up, you know, hill XYZ. You're never going to remember your fastest time on Watopia Island. You're never going to remember your placing on that, you know, Zwift race, 6 years ago. What you will remember are the rides that make you a different person. That you will remember. And that, to me, defines solo riding. And not every ride can be or should be a solo-driven ride. It's impossible. Maybe some of you could. I think it's kind of like meditation to me. I don't know if many of you meditate. I'm not very good at meditation. I don't do very well at sitting still at all, ever. Which is why I ride a bike. I think one of the reasons why I like riding a bike so much, and I've been doing it, it's been a theme and meme in my life for basically the majority of my life. One of the reasons why it's still there and probably will never go away is that it is my personal way of meditation. So when I'm riding solo, I am not cognizant or care about numbers or empirical data or formulations. I only care about experiencing the moment as it's happening and the challenge that's presented in front of me. And again, as I want to reiterate, not every ride can be or should be solo, although that would be a great thing to achieve. But then it's funny, if every ride that I did turned into this spiritual event, then they wouldn't be special anymore, right? I mean, am I wrong in that thinking? Maybe I'm wrong in that thinking. Maybe, you know, like people that, you know, pray to God every day and they experience God, or they experience, you know, love with another person, that having that energy be palpable and at its zenith all the time, you know, maybe some people could handle that. I don't think I could handle that. As great as blissful feelings are, I don't know if I'd want it all the time. I think it would exhaust me, at least in the physical sense. Maybe even the spiritual or emotional sense as well. Again, I'm not trying to go off tangent here. I think that what is most important to me moving forward with something like Solo TV is, and I develop new programs and content, is that on the surface, I think many of you may look at it and say, well, it's just a bunch of videos, a bunch of training plans, some podcasts, some digital stuff. You know, where's the solo? Well, here's the thing. And I want you to pay close attention. I need a drink of water real quick. I'm not drinking enough water. I'm just not. One of the most important things about solo is that no one can give it to you. I can't put it in a box, wrap it with a bow, and put a price tag on it and sell it to you. I can't give it to you. I can't even give you hints on how to achieve it for yourself personally. Solo can only be achieved on one's own. Seriously, and there's no other way around it. Again, it's going back to the idea of the connection with God, whatever that God may be for you, whatever that means to you. I'm not going to try to define that for anybody. That's up to each individual one of us. But that connection to self, to God, to your bike, to yourself on your bike is individual. And it's so individual that it can't even be expressed from one person to another. Because I'll tell you right now, you and I could both go out on an epic journey on our gravel bikes, like me and Tim did, you know, a couple years ago. We traveled across the entire state of Vermont in one day. Epic. I mean, it was like 175 miles up to the kingdom and then a couple more days of mountain biking. It was a ride I will never forget. A ride absolutely unequivocally that was 100% solo. Was my solo experience riding with Big Tim the same as it was for him? I guarantee the answer is no. He and I will have two different versions of what that ride means. Now, we did the same distance. We rode together side by side. We, you know, we helped each other when things got tough. Tim probably had to help me more than I had to help him, but that's normal. But the emotional response, the remembrance of that for each one of us will be slightly different. The landscapes, the temperature, the rain, all those things that we had will be the same, but how we feel about them, how we will remember them are different. And that's important because that's really the energy that I think allows you to do things you didn't think you could do before. And again, to me, what solo really represents is a tunnel or a gateway to do things on a bicycle that you never could or never thought you could before. So what I want to do right now is go over a couple different ideas that I've come up with regarding solo challenges that I'd like to begin to present, offer, and support here within Solo TV. So I know today's podcast is actually available for everyone. Again, I've really gone back and forth here, just really as a quick side note, back and forth with my new podcasting. On the surface, I really want to protect my equity and my value in what I provide, which means I need to lock down all of my podcasts and most of my information, which I think most people would agree with. I can't just be Mr. Freebie. I can't do that. There's plenty of that on the internet. And if freebie is what you're looking for and you don't really care about the content or the quality of the content, then there's plenty of other places to go. What I'm trying to do is offer content that is very unique and has more purpose and more value to you than just a video or just a podcast or just a power profile. You know how I feel about that stuff. I mean, again, I present them, I offer them to you. How you use them as tools to get to your solo is up to you. So today I have the podcast available for everyone to listen. Obviously, it's because I want to reconnect with a lot of people that haven't tried Solo TV yet as well. I know a lot of you are on the fence wondering if this is something you want to invest in. Again, I've got two great options for you with either monthly membership at $10. I mean, again, $10 for everything that I've got anytime you want. I can't be any more of a bargain than that. And of course, I've got my better deal, which is my annual special, which gets you more downloads, full access, saves you a truckload of money. In any case, what I'd like to do here in Solo TV, one of the things that I've been wanting to do is create more of a collective, a more of spawning of ideas between us globally as everyday cyclists and solo riders for self-driven challenges, solo challenges. And I want to go over that in detail just real quick. I need another drink of water. So if you receive my emails, and I know many of you do, I sent out one the other day of an idea about Everesting. And I'm just going to really quickly explain this as an idea or a concept, one concept for different solo challenges that I can offer, spawn, present, and more importantly, support here for members in Solo TV. Everesting, if you haven't heard of it yet, is someone is an individual's concept of basically being a nut job. No offense, but that's the truth. I've decided to try to climb the equivalent of Mount Everest in one ride, all at one time. So it's 29,029 feet, or 8,800 and some odd meters. Basically, it's a shitload of climbing in one freaking ride. One ride. You can't do it in three rides. You can't do it in six rides. There's a whole set of rules. So if you go to Google and you just query Everesting, you can get right there at the top pick is the website for Everesting. It has the rules. You can do it both inside on Zwift or on your indoor trainer. I think Zwift is the only way you can really do it, as well as really the way I would suggest it, which would be outside, of course, in the real world, climbing your 29,000 feet. Now, this is actually a challenge that I've been monitoring myself the past 2 or 3 years. It's a challenge that definitely, you know, is going to be a tough one to achieve. You know, 29,000 plus feet in one ride. More importantly, it has to be on one freaking hill or mountain. So you can't just go out for a ride and climb 29,000 feet, you know, crossing the state of Vermont like Tim and I did, which was only about 17,000 feet. For the ride that we did. That was 170 miles, 17,000 feet. So you can imagine, man, it's going to have to be a pretty monstrous ride. So the rules of Everesting is that you have to do it in one ride, basically a set of repeats up and down whatever hill you choose, whether the hill is 300 feet tall or it's 3,000 feet tall or 10,000 feet tall is up to you. But the bottom line is that it has to be on the same hill and, more importantly, the same way up the hill. So you're basically going back and forth all day long. And again, that would be up to you on which hill you decide to go and do it on. I think there might be some more stipulations there. Again, go to the website for Everesting and see for yourself. But again, some of you might think, well, that's just ridiculous. That's so stupid. Why would I want to go back up and down, you know, to get to 29,000 feet? Well, again, I didn't say that solo rides or challenges have to make sense. Okay, in fact, 9 times out of 10, a great solo ride will make no sense to anybody. I mean, last year when I did my, you know, 200-mile gravel solo ride, I did it in loops. So I did basically 8 loops of 25 miles. To some people might be, well, what's solo about that? Well, let me tell you, it definitely was solo. And I talk about that here in a couple minutes. But because it was self-driven, because, again, I'm going to come up with some guidelines. I'm going to rough cut today. And any of you that want to send me some further ideas to add to solo challenge guidelines, feel free to do so. But some of my original concepts are, number one, is that a solo challenge has to be, of above all else, a non-registered event. I think that's important to me. It can't be a race. It can't be something you pay someone for. It has to be something that you choose to do on your own volition with no registration necessary. And there's a reason why that's important to me, and one of the probably top guidelines for a solo challenge from my perspective is that if you have to pay for it, it automatically is under the umbrella of someone else's solo concept. And like I mentioned about Big Tim and myself riding across the state of Vermont, although we did the same event, if you will, we have two different aspects of how it turned out. And I think it's important that for a solo challenge, it be of self-volition, self-choice, because automatically what that does, from my perspective, is it creates ownership of what it is that you're doing, okay? And that ownership is important, and I think it creates a value that registration fees can't do. I'll give you an example. I've climbed Mount Washington, I think, 3 or 4 times now. I grew up in New Hampshire, so being in and around Mount Washington is something that, you know, it's something that I remember. You know, it's something that brings up my childhood. When I first got into cycling, my first thing that I ever did as a big solo ride was circumnavigate the state of New Hampshire, which is where Mount Washington is. And that was, an 11-day, 1,400-mile or something like that. 1,100 miles in 11 days around the state of New Hampshire. I was 10 years old when I did that. 10. It was nuts. I'll never forget it. I remember going up, you know, Pinkham Notch over there at the base of Mount Washington. We got snowed in at the base before we headed down to North Conway. Going back to those places, it again brings back that energy. And the first or second time that I did Mount Washington, to me, as an adult, that felt solo because it was this epic, you know, hardest, it's, you know, they dub it the hardest mountain climb in the world. And having climbed, you know, a good fair share of mountains, you know, around the world, I'd say that, yeah, it's a tough freaking climb. It's pretty short, though. You know, it's like, I think, what, 7-some-odd miles of total length. There's a couple, you know, 18% plus gradients, finishing at like 25%. The biggest thing with Mount Washington is the epic weather. Again, you know, I think the last time that I was there, or second to last time, the event got canceled because they had like 120-mile-per-hour winds and snow in August at the top of the mountain, and they couldn't allow us to go up. I mean, that's how crazy Mount Washington can get. In any case, although that is an epic and potentially solo event, it's a $350 to $400 event. I mean, every year they raise the price. I mean, I remember by my third or fourth time thinking, God, why am I paying $350 to go and do the same thing that I've done before and maybe take a minute off my best time? At some point, this is just kind of ridiculous. No offense to Mount Washington, no offense to their event, but from a solo perspective, to do it once, I'm in agreement with. Fantastic. I have no problem with that. To do it 8 times or 20 times, I mean, to me, yeah, I'll pass. I'll figure something else out to do that's more challenging. And here's the irony. So what, 2 years ago, I decided instead of spending $350 to register for Mount Washington, something that would take me, you know, an hour and 20 minutes to complete, all that training, all that money for an hour and 20 minutes. Like, I could probably get a better rate of return if instead I took my gravel bike and I put a whole bunch of, you know, pack gear on it, and I rode from my house in Southern Connecticut on the shoreline of basically Long Island Sound all the way up to Mount Washington, which is exactly what I did. So instead of paying an event registration to do Mount Washington, I did, on my own volition, a 5-day solo journey from my house all the way up to Mount Washington 5 days later. And I met my family up there. We stayed there for a couple extra days. Turned out to be a phenomenal experience for me. And again, when I first got into cycling, my first real solo experience in cycling was venture riding, you know, basically pack touring, which is much slower. Not performance driven. There is no KOMs. There is no performance. It's just simply, you know, get from point A to point B, camp out or get into a hotel, and then, you know, wash, rinse, and repeat and do it again the next day. Each moment is about experiencing the journey. And man, it is just awesome. It's awesome stuff. I love it. And again, a good example of something that was solo at first, climbing Mount Washington, then turned less solo as it became more about the number. So, you know, why would you want to go back to Mount Washington to go slower than you did before, right? I mean, we can debate that all we want, but let's be honest. I've been to the base of Mount Washington many times and seen how serious people take climbing Mount Washington. It's a serious event. I mean, it is dead silent during warm-up as people are getting nervous to go up this beast of a climb all the way to the top. And from my perspective, I think a lot of people take it too seriously. And it's not that I'm harping on people that take stuff seriously, but more, are you still getting to the why do you ride? Because if this is all that you do, then maybe you're getting distracted from what it is you really want or hoping to feel. But that's my own personal opinion. So real quick, I want to wrap up today's show with just a couple other ideas for you. And these are just a couple ideas off the top of my head and some things that I've personally done that really stand out to me, things that I'll never forget. Let's put it that way. So we talked about Everesting. Again, that's someone else's idea, but it's a really cool idea. You know, basically climbing 29 or 30,000 feet. I think they have like a bonus thing. If you climb 30,000 feet, you're in like some kind of mile high club or whatever the hell they call it. I don't really know. Hell's 500 or something like that. Really cool. Again, you can go to Google, query Everesting. Maybe it appeals to you. Maybe it's like, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard of. So that again, everything has to come down to one quick thing before I go further. To pick a solo challenge for yourself, to me, if you're not excited or a little bit scared about it right away, then it's not for you. It can't be really something that you have to warm up to. From my personal perspective, it has to be something immediately that causes a visceral reaction. And if it doesn't, probably not the one you're looking for. Because again, if you're going to do this, if you're going to do something like this, something that's epically challenging for yourself, then it's got to stir up some fears, some emotions, and typically some childlike excitement. Even if you're 70 years old, 80 years old, that doesn't mean you can't have childlike excitement. And again, I think that's the secret ingredient for these solo challenges, is to get those those internal bearings kind of all hopped up. Example number two, I did this in 2015. Actually, once I got back from my five-day journey up to Mount Washington, about a week or two later, I did, without planning it, this actually was not pre-planned, and I know I've done a podcast about it actually all on its own, but I did a 100x3 bike relay. Basically what that is in a seven-day period, I did three different 100-mile-plus solo rides on three different bikes, one on my road bike, one on my mountain bike, and one on my gravel bike. And let me tell you, it was one of the coolest self-driven solo challenges I've ever done. I love it. In fact, it's probably on my list to do again in a different way. How yet, I'm not really quite sure, but in a different way again this year. What I liked about it is it's huge amounts of variety, huge amounts of self-challenge, and more importantly, I did it on my own turf. And I think that's a really cool thing with solo is that you don't have to pack your bags and travel halfway across the country to do a solo ride. Although that can definitely be something that you can do, I don't think solo has to be defined by expense or travel. In fact, I would say my best solo rides of all time have happened on my own turf. One of them last year being my 200-plus miler on gravel, and the other one a year and a half before, the 100x3 bike relay. Now, again, you could take that and change the idea and say, well, Graham, I don't have three different bikes. I don't mountain bike at all, or I don't have a gravel bike or whatever. Great. Then maybe a 100x3, you know, one bike relay. Again, there are no limits here to really what your solo self-challenges can be. These are just some ideas for us to consider together as a group that maybe we could create a, I don't want to say a leaderboard. I want to say a support board for each type within Solo TV. And then my job is to offer resources to assist you with the pragmatics of preparing for such a solo journey. Is it starting to click now? Starting to make sense? Nod your head. Say, yeah, brilliant, Graham. You're so smart, Graham. Let's move on to idea number three. Again, this one is one I did last year. One, though, that I think is really cool, which is a double century, which is a 200-mile or 200-mile plus. Again, it doesn't have to be about a number. I think what I like about this particular challenge, and I did a whole podcast on Everyday Cyclist podcast about this one challenge in particular, is basically a lengthy amount of time on a bicycle. Let's say 10 hours plus. I know many of you that are listening to the show have never been on a bike for over 10 hours. If you haven't, I mean, let me tell you, it's quite the experience to get on a bike for over 10 hours. I mean, there's another challenge you could do, which would be a 12-hour or a 24-hour. Now, back in the day for mountain biking, 24-hour challenges used to be all over the place. There used to be a whole series of 24-hour challenges. In particular, on mountain bike, one of the reasons why it was mostly pertaining to mountain bike, just think about it, is that it's much better to create loops, you know, like 10 or 12-mile loops with mountain biking specifically. Because it's still a great, 12 miles on a mountain bike can be really challenging. I guess it'll be an hour long 12-mile loop, you get me? Where with road bike, obviously, it's quite a bit different. And of course, because it's 24 hours and it goes overnight, doing that on the road from a registration perspective, as you can imagine, from an event perspective, is pretty dangerous. And there's a lot of liability there. So mountain bike kind of took the reins with 24-hour events, of course. They are making a bit of a comeback. But my feeling is that you could do a 24-hour all on your own or with a friend or with a group of friends. Again, I talked about this last year. When I did my 200-miler, one of the things that I liked about it the most and one of the things I would repeat and probably even do more was I started my ride at 1 o'clock in the morning in the pitch dark all by myself, which was scary, which was exhilarating. And although I was on the same turf that I've been on a million times before, it felt like I was on the moon. Literally, that's what it felt like. It felt like here I am on stuff that I know like the back of my hand. I know where every rock is, every turn is. I know that I could do this blindfolded. But doing it at night with a light and bats chasing me and deer everywhere and the sounds of crazy wooded animals chasing me down when I had to stop and grab water or whatever, man, my heart was constantly pounding, not pounding because of physical exertion, but pounding because, man, this is freaking exciting. It's exciting. And if I'm going to do something that's solo and remember, you know, the ability to remember it, then you want it to be exciting. You want it to be something that really stirs up some primal emotions that goes beyond, well, I did 200 miles, and last time I did it, it took me 14 hours, and this time it took me 13 hours and 59 minutes. So, wow, I feel great. It's like, yeah, well, so you could have done it in 13 hours as opposed to 14. I mean, those things are kind of cool for a couple of minutes, but they never satisfy. The reason that I know this probably better than most is that because of my job detail and working with so many different types of cyclists for the past decade plus, I know that when the riders come to me with the pragmatic goals, the number goals, 9 times out of 10, they're never satisfied. They're never satisfied. And very rarely are they very ever happy with the results, even if they crush their goal. They're still unsatisfied. But a solo rider doing a self-driven solo event is usually always satisfied. And you know why? Because a true solo ride done correctly, there's no comparing. You can't compare it. So if I go back out again this year and do another 200-mile ride of my own volition, guaranteed I won't do it the same way I did it last time. It'll become a whole different experience. Whole different experience. And I'm going to have to really change it too, because really what's easy, even for someone like myself, is you start comparing times, even if it's on a different course, things like that. You start thinking, well, if I just get, you know, faster during lap 3 or lap 4, I can trim my, you know, 200-mile time down to this or to that. Look, you got to try to avoid those things, because the second that those numbers creep in, the solo can be lost. I mean, it's not guaranteed it'll be lost, but that solo connection can definitely be lost. Another great idea, climbing 50,000 feet in 1 week. So kind of like the Everesting idea and the 100x3 relay idea together in one concept. 50,000 feet of vert in 1 week. I've seen people do it. It's definitely achievable. But we're talking about, you know, even if you did like 6 rides, that's like 8,000 to 10,000 feet of vert every ride. Now, some of you, that might be pretty tough to do. You know, you live in Nebraska. That's not going to happen, right? You're not going to be able to do that event in Nebraska. You're not going to be able to do that event in Florida. And if you could, more power to you. That's a lot of bridges to climb if you're down in Florida trying to do that. So obviously some of these goals and solo challenges are terrain specific. Some of them are location specific. And more importantly, they need to be personally specific. And that's the most important thing from my point of view. Again, a couple of the other ideas are 24-hour events. Even if not the 24-hour event, if I ever did another 200-mile, or basically, let's put it this way, if I ever did another self-induced solo ride of great endurance, meaning over 12 hours, I would start probably at like 6 o'clock in the afternoon and ride through the entire night. That's what I would do for sure. If you've never done an overnight ride, in particular on a mountain bike, again, I try not to recommend people being out on the streets in the pitch black with lights on for that many hours. I mean, again, I'm not saying you can't do that. I know a lot of randonneur riders, you know, do that. Brevet riders obviously do that. I'm not a big fan of that personally, because as darkness falls, even with good lights, even with good blinkies, obviously, there's more out there than just animals, and you know what I'm talking about. I mean, there's cars with, you know, drunk drivers, there's people not paying attention or texting in the dark, or it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and people are just not thinking that there's going to be a cyclist out there. So from my personal perspective, guideline 3 would be a challenge that is definitely worthy and definitely self-challenging, but not one that puts you at unnecessary risk. I'm not saying that the ride cannot have risks. It needs to have risk, but not in the risk quotient where the risk values go so high that it's like, okay, your challenge here really isn't against yourself or against this terrain or course, but it's about averting disaster. That to me is not something that I would recommend. Doesn't mean you can't do it, but from a personal perspective, I wouldn't want to put you in that kind of harm's way. But again, you can do this any way that you want. These are just ideas. Last one I got here is crossing your own state. Now, if you've ever crossed your own state, let's say you live in Nebraska or you live in California or you live in Connecticut. I mean, crossing the state of Connecticut is not a big deal. I've crossed the state of Connecticut at least from south to north many, many times. I've never done it east to west. And maybe I would. Maybe doing like in Connecticut, you'd probably have to do like a box, you know, like north, south, east, and west to make it challenging. But crossing like the state of Vermont, I've crossed the state of New Hampshire. I have crossed the panhandle of Florida. And that's probably about it. But crossing your state would be a really cool idea. And again, you can see how this can matriculate into so many different ideas. There are, again, what I want to make clear is that a good solo challenge, there are no limits. There are no real rules other than, from my perspective, as I don't want to call them rules. I hate the idea of rules. But guidelines, self-induced, non-registered, doesn't mean you can't spend money on. Again, so if you're traveling or whatever, obviously there's an expense there, but the expense is to you. It's an investment in yourself. And it has to spawn an energy in yourself that far surpasses your time, your place, or your performance. Because many times, some of these rides, your performance is secondary to your experience. Okay? A lot of us, I think, and again, I think this is where I'm going to end as well. I think a lot of us, especially with going back to the idea of the technology really bumping up over the past few years available to us, is that a lot of us have just fallen under this kind of prison of defining our experience by our performance. And to me, to truly perform well, you need to focus on the experience. If you're focused on the experience, the performance will eventually be there. But if you're only focused on the performance to get to the experience, you'll never get there. And I'm going to end with that. Got to. Anyway, my friends, I hope that's helpful. Again, these are just some of the ideas that I've got. Please feel free to send me some of your own ideas, whether you're a Solo TV member or not. Again, this is something I'm looking to kick off in the coming weeks. I want to have a couple different posting boards here in Solo TV for us as members. I'm going to pick one or two of these myself. I will have, based on interests, I may offer things like team jerseys or prizes or things like that. Again, that way it's got some extra motivation there. But this isn't to be competitive. I mostly want to make it about finishing, okay, which is the most important thing. I think if you can finish what you set out to achieve, as long as it's worthy, then there's a reward available there. And again, whether I offer jerseys or prizes or stuff should be secondary to your own personal reward of what you get out of it. My friends, I hope that's helpful. If you're here in Solo TV already, please come in and check out the Climbing Surge if you haven't already. It's a really good program. I've used some older materials and then revamped them with some new ideas to make them really progress forward. You can use them with the Cycle 90 Masters program that's in here. And again, I've got some new ones on top of this that are coming out next. If you're not currently a member here in Solo TV, love to have you in here. Again, even if you just come try me out for $10. I have not offered a free membership as of yet. There's a couple of reasons that I haven't. Mostly because I think free sucks, to be perfectly frank. I really honestly do. I think when people do things that are free, they expect crappy things. And I don't offer crappy things. So I think that for $10 for a month's worth of work, if you don't like it, you cancel your membership. I think you will like it, to be quite frank. And if you like it even better, you know, the annual membership. I do have a lot of requests coming in for launching a premium or coaching-like version of Solo TV. It is on my to-do list. I'm trying to get better first before I take on that extra task on top of that. It is something I really would like to do, much like my premium membership of Cycle Club, which was probably my biggest success that I've done. I will be moving in that direction, but not just yet. One thing at a time, my friends. I will let you know when that does become available. To speak again, right out of the smile on your face, ride your soul. I will talk to you soon.